Yeah. You pass it out? Please don't read it yet. I wrote a letter to all of you guys. Ordinarily, now, this piece of paper that's being handed out is a letter from me to you. Ordinarily, we begin our class with reading from Rav Eliyahu Kitov, and then we go on to having an open session discussing things with regard to marriage and the Jewish home. I've gotten many questions lately from people over the internet, questions which include how can it be in Judaism that you get married when you don't live together with the other person? Questions which include the things that we'll quote here. Obviously, I've changed the questions around a little bit so as not to embarrass anyone. But these are questions that have come up in the last 2-3 months over the internet. And I think that if this is what's being asked over the internet, so then the people here must have the same question. So the title here is Defining Love. And the letter says as follows: Dear gentlemen, and this goes to the gentlemen and the ladies who are following on the internet, I have come to a standstill. I am bewildered, befuddled, confused, puzzled, and slightly disoriented by the baffling, perplexing, and somewhat confusing things that I have heard of late. There's a little bit of humor, you guys should smile. As you well know, I am one of your biggest fans. I truly admire you and have great respect for you. It is because I so value what you say that I want your help in trying to decipher and make sense of what is being said. I would like to quote to you some of the things that have been said recently. Person number one. Rabbi, I have a question. Let's say you see this girl that you really love and you want to talk to her, etc. So I asked at this point, did you say you really love her? Have you ever spoken to this girl before? And the person replies, no, but you see her, and the question continues. Person number two. Rabbi, I'm dating this girl that I really love, and I think we're going to break up tomorrow. You mean she's going to stop the relationship? So the man answers me, no, I might end the relationship. So I ask, why would you end the relationship with someone you love? And the answer, well, it's not that kind of love. And then a lot more, and then, I don't know if we match. I'm wondering if I could stand staying with her, etc. Person number three. I'm dating this girl who I love, and I think that she's bad for me. At which point, I just asked, how does that work? So, I sort of have come to the conclusion that the word love is being defined a little differently than what I'm used to. And that is why, at the beginning of this class, I want your help. I wrote a list of questions here, and I think it's best if we just not look at all the questions all at once, but answer them one at a time. And the first question is, what is love? And if you guys don't mind, I would appreciate it if you could take out a pen and write your answers. I won't read it out loud, but it'll help me at least in knowing what to deal with in this class, because from the questions I'm getting the feeling that we have a totally different perspective on love, life, and marriage. And maybe this should have been the first class we had before we started our Binyan HaBayit class. So those of you who have a pen, good. And those of you who don't, I have an extra pen for you, so I'll be good for one person. And those of you who are listening on the web, you're welcome to write down the answer and think about it. These answers are more for you than they are for me. Whoever doesn't want to hand in the paper could leave it by them. Whoever does want to hand in the paper, it'll be of help for me. I'll get more pens and paper. Pens. Okay. After taking 10 minutes for everyone to answer the first 2, 4, 5 questions, I'd like to add 2 more questions. We asked, what is love? What is important to verify before marriage? What do you expect to get out of marriage? What do you expect to invest in marriage? What do you expect from your wife? And for our female listeners, we would reverse that. What do you expect from your husband? I would like to add, what does it take to make a marriage work? And I don't mean the bare minimum. I mean a good marriage. What does it take to make a good marriage? What does it take to make a marriage work? And the last question is, before we mention the last question, let's introduce it. Our sages say that during the period of the Second Temple, the Anshei Knesset Gadol, the men of the Great Assembly, recognized that the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah was doing terrible things. People were serving idols, so they abolished the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. They got rid of it. And when they saw that worked so well, that people weren't interested in serving idols, they said, let's try it with another Yetzer Hara. So they abolished the Yetzer Hara for women. They abolished the Yetzer Hara for having relations. And the Gemara says that the next morning, no chicken laid an egg. The world came to a standstill. So they recognized that this is necessary. So they reinstated the Yetzer Hara for women, but they blinded it a little bit so that people are no longer attracted as much to what would constitute incest. Whereas before the period of the Second Temple it was rampant, afterwards our sages, when they reinstated the Yetzer Hara for women, they reinstated it but not with the force that it had had beforehand. And so any person that that has reached the teenage years is going to normally want to get married because he's attracted to the opposite gender. Any normal person is. And that is not the answer to this question. The question is, why are you getting married? As a given...
Number two?
Yeah, the second question I'm asking is, why are you getting married? It's a given that part of, and maybe probably the major reason why everyone gets married, is because they're attracted to the opposite gender. That the physical attraction is obviously there. And we see that when it isn't there, so then people didn't get married. So all the other reasons seem to be secondary. But we're asking, what are the secondary reasons? That reason we've already said. So logically, why are we getting married?
If you married Adam, that man should never be alone.
And yet we find that when there was no Yetzer Hara, people weren't getting married. So we see this is a necessary spice in life. So
in your opinion,
obviously we have...
In your opinion.
Obviously we the physical is definitely part of it. That's not the question. But logically, everyone does have reasons why they're getting married. You ask the average person why you're getting married, he doesn't say, well, I physically want a wife. It's not what people say. So there is some logic behind it. Our sages revealed to us that that logic isn't enough, because when they tested it, that logic wasn't the real reason why people were getting married. But there is still some logic to it, and that logic is necessary. That logic will dictate to us who we marry to an extent.
In fact, that logic goes against why are you getting married? Because getting married is
61 points. Okay. So, why are you getting married? That's the second question. The first question was, what does it take to make a marriage work? Meaning, to make the ideal marriage, to make a good marriage work. And the second question is, why are you getting married?
Why did you put yourself on the subject?
That was an introduction, sorry.
Huh?
That was an introduction. We discussed it before.
Oh.
You don't have to write anything. You don't have to hand it in. You can leave it by you.
Wow.
If you want to hand it in, I'd be interested in seeing what you wrote. But you don't have to hand it in. Gil, if you want one, we have more. If you want to fill one up. Michal, I think, has more copies.
Yeah.
No one wrote their names on that. I assume that's on purpose. But the truth is, it doesn't really matter.
Maybe you like it,
no, it doesn't matter. It'll just help me understand where you guys are coming from.
Okay. It didn't help me know nobody wrote the name.
Fine.
Right.
See,
I
meant that's why it's not necessary to write the name. Because, know how much marriage impacts our lives, we might never get married. No, I didn't mean that in a bad way. No, I'll explain. After you get married and you start living with your spouse and your life changes, as life goes on, you recognize more and more the weight of the decision of marriage. And whether it works or not, you have to work to make it work. Doesn't mean you shouldn't look for the right girl. But at the end of the day, there are always going to be things to work on, things to work out, and you have to invest in order for a marriage to work. You have to be willing to work your whole life to make it work. But if we would realize before we get married the weight of the decision, then most people would chicken out. It's a blessing that we don't understand the weight of the decision before we get married. It's only because people have been married and know the beauty of marriage, in my opinion, that after they're divorced or widowed, even though they understand the weight of the decision, they're so intent on getting married again, because they also know the benefits that come with it. But if a person would only have that side of the scale before marriage, if all he'd know was how much that decision is infinite, how it's going to affect everything in his life, then a person would be scared of getting married. How do I know she's Mrs. Right?
Yeah.
After you've been married, you realize that you're not Mr. Right and she's not Mrs. Right. It's make it right. Marriage is about making it work.
Yeah.
There's no that doesn't mean you don't look for someone who's going to be most compatible. Obviously, if you're interested in being abreast with her husband and she wants to go to the movies, there's going to be a problem. So you do try to find someone who's compatible. But at the end of the day, there's always going to be work. Once you're willing to invest, then you can reap the benefits. But the effects of marriage on a person's life are so great that a person can't know that in advance. But that's part of what we're going to get to now. Those of you who are writing can continue writing, and I want to begin with a question that was asked. The question was asked, how could it be Are we recording? Yeah. How could it be that in Judaism a couple doesn't live together, and yet they get married? How do you know who you're marrying? Maybe maybe he likes fat and she likes lean. How's it going to work? That's the childhood song. Sex, fat, could eat no fat, who likes to eat no lean. Okay.
Got it. Do you marry for meat, or do you marry for beauty?
Wait, wait. Well,
the Greek way or the Jewish way?
Well, I mean,
like,
you have to mix that. You can't just say the beauty is the Greek way, because you also have to have some of that. You can't. I mean, even though it may not be physical beauty, it could be spiritual beauty. I mean,
well, I think before we address what's necessary in order to love someone, we have to think, where are we headed? What are we going to do? What's the purpose of marriage? It always puzzles me. I am bewildered, befuddled, confused, and puzzled when people people stress, I want a girl with blonde hair. Well, she's going to cover her hair, right? So you want, let her wear a blonde shape though. That's what's critical? I don't get it. I want to have 15 kids, but my wife has to be skinny like a stick. But you know, 15 kids, she's going to be pregnant most of the God should bless you, you should merit to have that, but pregnant woman is not skinny like a stick. I don't understand people. I have more ones, right? So really, when people say the lines that are written here, it causes me to wonder what people are thinking when they use the term love. How can a person say, I saw this girl and I really love her, and you never spoke to her? So how can you say you love her? So then the question is, what does the word love mean? And the truth is that love is a word in English, so I guess you'd have to open a dictionary, and however the dictionary defines the word love, that's the definition of love. But when we use the term here, at least
I love a Shem, I love my fellow Jew, I love my dog. What's the difference?
I don't know. Let's begin with something that Rav Miller Tzatzal used to say. Said people say, I love fish, and they sit down for delicious fish, say, ooh, I love fish. Rav Miller always used to say, if you loved fish, you'd get them a fish tank. You'd get them delicious fish food. If you're eating the fish, you love yourself. You don't love the fish. And when people tell me that they saw a girl that they really love and they never spoke to her, so I have to ask myself, are they loving that girl like the person who's about to eat the fish? And they say, I love fish. Today, the term love has at least gotten me confused. What do people love? If you love a car, do you love the car? So what does the word love mean? So in Hebrew, when we use the term ahava, the Kabbalists say that the word ahava comes from the word hav, to give. And the term ahava stems from the want to give. When you really love someone, at least the way I use the word love, you want to give that person. You want to make it good for that person. In modern society, we view love as taking. We view a relationship as, what do I get? You don't value a girl's beauty because you want to give her something. No one can say that, I love the girl, she's so beautiful, and they want to say this because they want to give her something. They might want to take something. They might want to enjoy something, but they don't want to give. So who are they loving? I think it's very difficult to say that they're really loving the other person. When we discuss love, we should begin with a very, very gruesome picture. I'll explain. There was a man who defined love for us. His name was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, every morning I say in Shema, V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, should love Hashem your God, bechol levavcha, with all of your heart, bechol nafsha, with all of your soul. And I always wonder, Matai avoli adi v'achaymenu. Rabbi Akiva says, the Gemara in Brachos that we saw 2 weeks ago in our intro to Talmud, Rabbi Akiva always said, when will I have this pasuk come, and will I live up to fulfilling that pasuk? And as Rabbi Akiva was standing, and the Roman officer was taking these huge peelers and peeling the flesh off of Rabbi Akiva, his students saw him busy saying Shema, and they said, Rabbi, to this point you're standing having the flesh being peeled off your body, you're saying Shema? And Rabbi Akiva said, my whole life I've been wondering, will I be able to live up to this pasuk? Will I really love Hashem to the point where when my life is being taken out of me, I'm able to say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and now I'm given the opportunity to fulfill that and I won't do it? This is what I've been building up to my whole life in my relationship between me and God. So we have to ask ourselves, what love is that? Love is that a person has the skin being peeled off of them and they're saying God is one? How does that fit into the term love? There was a person who said love was taking off an ear and giving it to the girl. You guys know that, right? Famous painter, sculptor. An ear. What was his name? With a V. Van Gogh. Yeah. So he was crazy. But Rabbi Akiva wasn't crazy. Rabbi Akiva was the epitome of truth and true love of Hashem. So we have to stop and ask ourselves, so what does love mean? Love does not mean, what do I take? What does Hashem give me? Love might mean, how devoted am I? How much am I willing to give? It's a little bit different than what Western society developed in our mind. Western society develops a thought that love is what we enjoy. Love is the time that two people are spending on the bus kissing in front of everyone else. How do you say, what's love? That's what everyone shows us is love. They're loving one another. Are they really loving one another? Is that really what love is about? Today you walk around and you have billboards talking about love. Is that really love? Is that really honoring the other person? If we're stressing the physical, and again, if I am attracted, and I think that's a more correct word, to a girl because of her beauty, can I then say that I love her? What about her am I loving?
There's a kind of honoring inside.
I'm honoring, really? Or am I valuing what I think is in it for me? The Gemara says in Yuma on the verse in the verse in Mishlei, Tov Marei Inayim Mehalach Nafesh, and this is something which I think only the guys will understand among our listeners. The pasuk says, Tov Marei Inayim Mehalach Nafesh. What one sees with his eyes is better than what one experiences with his soul. And the Gemara says that refers to a man being with a woman, that a person derives more satisfaction and more pleasure from his imagination than from the act itself, which the Gemara says people can spend the whole day imagining and fantasizing, and to an extent a lot of today's marketing is based on that. You show a guy a nice car with a nice girl standing next to him, he's interested in buying the car. What's the connection?
He doesn't think that.
He fantasizes that. But we spend a lot of our day fantasizing. The Gemara says, so it's not a new phenomenon, the Gemara says there are a few things that no one comes clean of. That no one could say he's had a day he's clean of. One of them is having an improper thought. So that means that when God created man, that's part of the blueprint. That's how God created us. I say men because I think today women are different. Chazal's time, maybe women were more like men. But in today's time, seems like women are different. But we have to ask ourselves when we're talking about marriage and we're talking about love, so we have to be honest and remind ourselves, what am I loving about someone else and what am I loving about myself? And a lot of the things that we call love is really loving ourselves. Yeah?
Rabbi, I accept what you're saying, and I really do, but because it's happened to me, I believe in love at first sight. Is there any such concept in Judaism? For example, if I may say, and I don't like to bring this example in, but someone as great as David, Melech David, he saw Bathsheba, and he fell in love with Bathsheba.
How do you know he fell in love with her?
Well, I hope he did. I think he did. I would put it on the line that he did.
Let's see. Is there anywhere in Tanakh that says that David loved a woman?
I think actually the only relationship between the women.
I haven't reviewed the book of Shmuel recently or Divrei Hayamim recently enough to remember. I'm not sure, but we'd have to look it up to make sure. If it really says that David loved a woman, I don't remember. It says that you have David. I'm trying to remember the verse. It could be it actually does say it about Bathsheba. I don't remember. We have to look it up. But just because he married her doesn't mean he loved her. We'd like to think it does, but if we're gonna say it does, then we have to prove it.
And isn't the paradigm for a relationship to Hashem also your relationship to your wife? Isn't that also broad? It's the love that you share between each other. So David, with his great love of Hashem, surely loved his wife.
The story of Bathsheba happens to be one that has to be explored. But for sure David loved his wife. If he married them, then it's fair to assume he loved them. But that specific case where David...
Did you say he loved her, he had to love her because he married her?
It would seem that way, no? If he, why not?
Well, you see that he was able to marry her because he killed Columbia. Had nothing to do with love.
But the question is, would he marry a woman that he didn't love? The Gemara says that one is commanded to, one should not engage a woman through a messenger, because if you don't see her, then could be there's going to be something about her which will bother you. And if you, one second, we didn't say that she was loving, but if you engage a girl and then you marry her and you find out that she's covered with boils, you never saw her before, and you're disgusted, you don't want to touch her, you can understand that that's going to affect the relationship a little bit, right? Theoretically, we should be above that and we should love her, but some people are on a level where that won't bother them. Some people have developed a relationship with the person where that won't bother them. But if a person is engaged with the girl and he has no idea that's what's coming, and then he stands under the chuppah and she walks up and says that, well, we can understand that that's sort of going to affect their relationship. The Gemara says, "V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha," because you're supposed to love your fellow man like yourself. You're not supposed to engage a girl unless you've seen her, because there might be something that will bother you about her. So, part of loving your fellow man like yourself is having a relationship with one's wife where one loves her. It's part of what we owe a fellow man. In this case, it's the woman who we've made a bond with for life. So we owe it to her to love her.
Oh, so we love her the way we love our friends.
No. Because we're supposed to like her no less than our fellow man. Just like if you expect me to call you and wish you a happy birthday, and I don't, so I'm not in fulfillment of Ahavta L'reacha Kamocha, because that is your expectation of me as for our relationship. So too, with this woman, I have a relationship where her expectations of me are to show my full devotion and my complete love, the way I use the word love. And if I cannot show that to her, I'm not fulfilling Ahavta L'reacha Kamocha. Ahavta L'reacha Kamocha depends on the relationship. The Gemara says it applies. Let's say the Beit Din is taking a man out to the gallows. So then the Beit Din has to find out within the context, within the framework of the law, what is the best possible way of putting this person to death. Because Ahavta L'reacha Kamocha, because within this relationship, they can't take him off death row. He's being found guilty and there's no proof otherwise, and there's a lot of proof proving that he's going to have to be put to death. But within that framework, we have to make it the best possible death. The best possible way, how would he want us to put him to death? And the Gemara has questions. What's better? Meaning, if we're stoning a person, And we could do it naked or with clothing. So then the Gemara has two opinions. What's better for the person? Would the person rather have clothing and then the death takes a drop longer, but at least he's not shamed? Or would a person say at this point, I'd rather have the shame and have the death come quicker? So the Gemara has two opinions. We try to figure out what would be better for the person. That's a good question, why we don't ask the person. You're saying maybe it's individual. That needs to be defined. That question has been bothering me for over 10 years. I have an answer, but I'd like to see someone else that says it. I'm not sure if my answer is correct. Just 1 second. Michael, so you're not with me.
No, I'm with you. I know a lot of people get married and they have no love.
That's a problem. That's not what we would recommend within Judaism. When a person gets married, he's supposed to marry someone who he will love, and then in time, right, the relationship develops into love.
Right. But you don't marry her because you love her. Marry because you're
so born. That I didn't want to say it because I don't think guys are ready to hear that yet. We'll get to when we define what love is, then we'll get to the concept that love really grows within the marriage. Mm-hmm. That true love is what grows within the marriage, and it's within Judaism, and I think also out of Judaism, but I don't know enough about that. But I think that it is practically impossible to have real love before marriage. But that I think the guys aren't ready to hear yet, because we haven't yet worked out what does love mean. What are we getting married for? The relationship before marriage has to reach a certain point that shows that there's potential for love. But the real love is only what's going to be there after marriage. We might think we love the other person before marriage because we've never experienced real love. But again, that's something which I want to build up to. That's we're jumping ahead of the gun. Yeah.
Could it be said that after a person gets married, that they should understand that if their approach to that other person would be similar to a person who knows that he has a healthy wife, and it's reasonable to say that the child is going to be healthy, but whatever comes, and to do this, and even if there's problems with the baby as a teenager or whatever. Still unconditionally love him or her as a child, and so too we have a reasonable understanding that the wife is going to be a good person before marrying her. But what comes, and you can't just chicken out and just want to get a divorce, even though problems may potentially arise.
On almost everything, yes. But you have to remember that even with the relationship to our children, we see that there are times that a child is sent away. Avram does send Yishmael away at some point. There is a breaking point, even with the relationship with the child. And there is, there are children who can hit in their teenage years. I'll give you an example from real life. A guy had 8 or 9 children at home, and one of the children, when he became a teenager, decided he wants to rebel. So if I said, fine, one rebel, I'll respect that, but within the house, don't ruin my chinuch. And the kid went all out he decided he's going to teach all the kids there is no God, you don't have to put sisters. And he reached the point where the parents told the kid, if you're going to try to ruin everything I'm trying to build within the house, then I'll be happy to help you, and I still love you, but you won't be able to stay in the house. There is a breaking point. Even with children, there is a breaking point, where sometimes parents have to say, look, I have 9 kids here. If you're going to try, if you're going to steal money from me and your mother, etc., at some point, we're going to have to figure something else out, but you're not going to be able to stay here. So, obviously, we're not talking about a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old, but there is a point where, even with children, there is a breaking point. And in marriage, there is also a point where there is a breaking point. We had a whole class on that. The Torah does give us an out called divorce. There was a guy who got married, and his wife started cheating on him. Okay, at some point, there is a breaking point. That's why it's hard to use general terms. But the general approach is for sure what you said. That's an excellent example, what you said. It's just like when you have a child. You hope the child's going to be healthy. And afterwards, comes out whatever it is. And you're there for the child. It's your child. By the same token, in marriage, you pray for the best. And after you get married, you start discovering who the other person really is. And afterwards, you have to make it work, for sure. for sure the attitude. I just want to quantify that. It is quantified. Yeah.
What about that? You find a common point with a person, you agree that you will fit together and then you marry, and you love each other, but after, let's say, 30 years of common marriage, suddenly there is no love anymore. Happens. You really love each other for 30 years, or at least both of the partners love each other, and suddenly both or just one of the partners doesn't love the other anymore.
That goes into the question of the responsibility to marriage. That's why I would not put love and marriage as synonymous. Love is a very important factor, and it's very helpful, and it should be there, and it grows. But we had a class where we discussed that even in love and even within marriage, there are going to be ups and downs. And sometimes there could be downs for years. And the fact that there's a down is not an excuse to pull out of the marriage. And just to, even if both spouses feel like, I don't love the other one, that's not an excuse to pull out of marriage.
This is
something, and not only that, there will not be a marriage that will not have periods where both spouses feel I do not love the other one. That doesn't exist. And sometimes it could be for hours, sometimes it could be for days, sometimes weeks, and sometimes years. There will not, and that's part of what people have to recognize, that you cannot have a marriage where that won't happen. And if a person enters marriage and says, well, if I'm going to have a year where I just can't stand being with this other person, so we're going to discuss it. That's where we were headed today in Aliyah Kito. But there are periods like that, and what to do with periods like that. But that's not a reason to pull out of the marriage. It's a reason to stop and think and try to work things out, maybe go out more on dates, and maybe take the spouse out, maybe figure other things out. And maybe go to counseling, maybe 100 things. But that's not a reason to pull out of the marriage.
Question yeah. For the Torah. If the mitzvah and the Torah say Shimon and Levi are fighting each other and you kill Levi, Shimon is obligated, even though he's married, to bring Levi's wife home with him. So mitzvah and the Torah.
Show me.
If you fight against your enemy and your enemy's wife and family doesn't have anyone else,
show
then
me.
You're obligated to bring him.
Show
that's
me.
On the Torah.
Okay, show me. I don't know. You're telling me something. Fine,
sure.
This is
very interesting.
Okay, so sure. Yeah. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm saying I don't know what you're referring to. So show me.
Okay.
I don't know.
So basically, it's just about if you can see the personality or character in the blueprint, by just putting two of the right blueprints to fit together, and that's about it. And the rest, we can hold it there and everything.
I don't think so. That's what we're going to build towards. We're going to try to address all these questions slowly. That's our focus for the next few classes, trying to address these questions.
What's the difference between your soulmate, your true soulmate, and your helping soulmate?
I don't know what these terms are.
I don't know either.
I don't know, no.
Ezra with Pastor, Emmet Pastor. It's like, don't you have two different soulmates?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I got your 7 for each point in your.
Huh?
I got your 7 for each point in your list.
I have no idea. You guys are quoting me stuff that I don't know. In the Gemara, I don't think it says what you're saying. You're quoting to me other sources. Show me, I don't know. I don't know. Okay, Bezrat Hashem, we will continue next week. And we're going to continue with our Rav Eliyahu Kitov on Shalom Bayit. And after reading what you guys say, we will also move forward on this. I would very much like to have a session, at least with those people.